out of curiosity, what do the funding needs look like?
Well, to be honest,
after the end of the 600 grand is gone, what is that, you know, how much have you been able to generate?
Well, we have applied for over $1.5 million worth of grants, and we have been successful in getting $93,000 of that. One of the challenges we face in this position is that we are not a technical provider, and many of the grants that are out there are geared toward technical providers. It's hard to find a grant that will grant money for the job that Kay does, interacting between growers and regional board staff and that type of thing. The grant money that we have looked for, are we having a difficult time finding. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the challenges we have, but we look forward to working with staff and anybody who has any idea where to get some more money. We're happy to do it. To date, it's been a tough battle.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Kay Mercer, Herb Kandel, and then Hilda Zacharias.
So I'm Kay Mercer, and I'm the coordinator for the Southern San Luis and Santa Barbara Counties Agricultural Watershed Coalition, and thank you for letting me speak. I've been with the coalition now for about 3.5 years. It's been exciting. It's been challenging, and it's been ever-evolving. About the first year, we spent almost exclusively concentrating on setting up the cooperative monitoring program. There was no staff at that time, and the coalition stepped in and actually provided the position of a technical program manager, and it shared with someone else from the northern part of the region to try to, the two of us together were one technical program manager to make that work. In 2005, I started phasing out of that aspect of the cooperative monitoring program, started looking at management practices. As we looked at management practices, one of the things we started seeing were there were institutional barriers to management practice implementation. And some of those were food safety, permitting, the Endangered Species Act, the capital limitations that growers might have to implement management practices or upgrade their irrigation efficiencies. Another institutional barrier was actually distrust among people. And so we started taking more of a systems approach rather than, as Kevin alluded, the decision was made, we are not a technical service provider. We actually, our role is to facilitate and coordinate and to collaborate. And so we started taking a systems approach rather than an on-ground management practice approach. Kind of chose some of the low-hanging fruit. The regional board addressed permitting through the contract that you have with Sustainable Conservation. Two of the things that we really started looking at were the food safety gaps. I was working with the UC on a grant, which was not granted, for a conference to talk about co-management of water quality and food safety. And we started working on that in 2005, well before the spinach outbreak. But even though it was not granted, the UC and I were able to pull together a conference to discuss research priorities, and those were quantified, and that information is now going out to the research community. Endangered species, we did work on some of those issues. We tried to foster a safe harbor agreement for the red-legged frog in the Osoflaco watershed, and for a variety of reasons that was not successful. It ended up on the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service desk, and that's where it stands today. It is a overwhelming job. I work with about 1,300 growers, which is, compared to the San Joaquin Valley, is not a lot, but still it's we work with over 135 different commodities. There's 4,500 square miles and 135 watersheds, which is one of the things that's really difficult when we're talking to people in the San Joaquin Valley. What's the difference between what I do and their watershed coordinators? They're all a single watershed. We're working with literally 135 watersheds. Even though we've prioritized down to four, it's still there's demands from other areas. Some of the things that we've done is we have had over 79 grower meetings. Am I out of time?
You are.
Okay.
That's what the red light means.
All right. I heard noises.
Go ahead. Wrap it up.
Some of the details are we've we've been involved with over 79 grower meetings. We've made presentations to numerous professional societies. I've documented that I've provided a conditional waiver, compliance information, and education to over 500 growers. That's just what's documented. We did an actions and attitudes survey in combination with the UC, and what we were looking for is there really, can we quantify a connection between education and water quality education and actual implementation or changes in attitudes, and we were able to quantify that. So we have done numerous management practice classes for growers, and one of the things we try to do as well is educate the non-agricultural community on some of the challenges in the agricultural sector and try to get both sides talking to each other. Okay. So are there any questions?
Any board questions? Nope.
All
thank
right,
you
thank
very
you.
Much.
Just our thanks for
yes.
doing such a great job.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Herb Kandel, then Hilda Zacharias, and then Jill Falcone.
Good evening, board members. My name is Herb Kandel, and I'm taking off my volunteer hats as a Land Conservancy board member and president of Dan Adobe to speak as an energized volunteer and bring some grassroots energy to the meeting. I got fired up in 1999 when I went to the San Luis Obispo Urban Streams Conference, came back and started a local group, a watershed group with farmers and students and citizens. And we had a lot to learn, so we invited agency folks there. Agency folks became real faces and helped us solve real problems, and we developed rapport and relationship there. We also asked other honored guests to come to our meeting. We had Helen Bishop, 94 years old, and she told us about being a campfire girl in 1924 and having her toes in Napomo Creek and seeing the polywogs and the trout and the gravelly surface there. We went on to host forums with after the flooding. A lot of citizens in the community got involved. Farmers and neighbors, environmentalists, all started working together, side by side, solving problems and talking about land use issues. This citizens' effort attracted the Land Conservancy, and we got funding through the Department of Fish and Game for the watershed organization and a watershed plan, a multi-year project that went into great detail to study the watershed and look at creek delineations and many of the issues that came out of that were specific projects as well. To us volunteers, it wasn't surprising to learn that campfire girls were not able to put their toes in the creek anymore. The beleaguered watershed no longer supports water contact or beneficial use. It's an impaired water body for fecal coliform and aquatic life. For the last 2 years, I've focused my effort on one particular project, which you'll hear about with the next speaker, the Dan Adobe Cultural Landscape Project. And it's one of a host of projects from the Dunes Collaborative. Very good projects, and you know, I point out that not one of those has come before your staff for approval. And I'm here to challenge the notion that water quality education can only be handed down from expert consultants. I think real change, from my experience as a volunteer, is built on relationships and collaborations and partnerships from well-coordinated grassroots efforts as well as the institutional efforts that you're looking at. I'm also here to challenge the notion in your staff report that on-the-ground projects only treat symptoms. Well-designed projects, part of a larger program, have direct impact or models to the community. They provide means for collaboration between folks in the community. They inspire young students to take the classes that you're talking about offering in your worthy programs you're proposing. So today, I beseech your board to really carefully consider your final expenditure funds and consider the message you're sending to the army of professionals and volunteers who worked hard in the local Nexus area. So please consider the Guadalupe Dunes package. Also, I want to just add, it's a great opportunity for the Paradise Beach recommendations, a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, so don't pass on that. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. Hilda Zacharias, Jill Falcone, and then Robert Hill.
So the first sentence of my remarks was, good afternoon, but I'd like to start by saying good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
I'm Hilda Sacarias. I am the recently named executive director of the DANA Adobe Nipomo Amigos, which also the acronym is DANA. And we are project partners in the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County's project submission, which is for an acquisition of a 100-acre parcel that we are developing that will help meet a lot of the goals, not only of the Regional Water Quality Control Board, but really a lot of our own environmental goals and land preservation goals. And because we didn't have the opportunity to be recommended for funding, we thought we'd just take a few moments to share with you the highlights of this project. First, we wanted to let you know that this project is part of a larger context. Mr. Candel shared with you that this is one of the projects that was identified as important to the Comprehensive Nipomo Watershed Management Plan. That watershed plan, as he mentioned, was funded by the Guadalupe Settlement dollars. Secondly, this is a project that is within the severely impacted watershed, which is a tributary of the Santa Maria River estuary, and it has a direct geographic nexus to the contamination site. Thirdly, this is a well-developed project. The total cost of the project is $2.5 million. We have all but $700,000, which is the request that we made to you. We have the San Luis Obispo County has dedicated $1 million. This property will become a county park and will be preserved in its natural state. We also have monies from the EPA and also the California Cultural and Historic Endowment that is going to help us to develop the adjacent parcel. So we're actually creating a historical park that will, again, retain the integrity of the environmental elements. The fourth point is that this project is multifaceted with both direct and indirect water quality benefits, including the land protection, restoration, a demonstration of best management, agriculture, and water quality education. The acquisition is leveraged by several projects. One is, again, a partnership with our friends at the Land Conservancy, is a creek restoration project, which will result in the planting of more than 10,000 plants in a six-acre area, as well as over 1,000 new willow trees. It also is going to be the location of the 20-acre oak restoration project required of a developer who is crushing 960 live oaks, some as old as 500 or 600 years old, to be able to put in a new freeway on-ramp and off-ramp in the center of the Nipomo area. And also, it's located next to the historic DANA Adobe, which has, just today, had hundreds of school children coming and experiencing what it was like to be in California in the mid-1800s. We want them to be able to take advantage of an interpretive trail. We want them to be able to see what a creek actually looks like and should look like. And so we wanted to share with you that our goal in presenting the project as part of the collaborative was also one that said the whole community is supportive of this project, and we urge you to reconsider the whole package proposal for the Guadalupe Collaborative. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your comments. Joe Falcone, Robert Hill, and then Katie DeSimone.
Good afternoon. I'm Jill Falcone, the Stormwater Pollution Prevention Coordinator for the County of San Luis Obispo Stormwater Management Program. I'm here to support my support for staff's proposal to establish the Central Coast LID Center and to fund the CCAMP endowment. I applaud the direction that staff is proposing to address the root causes of wide-scale water quality and habitat degradation rather than merely treating symptoms. Eliminating the root cause of watershed problems is the only hope that we have of preventing continued this wide-scale degradation in the future. As you know, the greatest impacts to the Santa Maria River watershed are from urbanization and agriculture. LID does address the root causes of urban impacts. There's no problem finding interest in San Luis Obispo County for LID. We're at a critical turning point. We are learning a lot from implementing our two Prop 40 LID grants right now, and what we have learned is that the local business communities are very interested because they realize that LID will be a mandate in Slo County within 2 years, and there's a very big business opportunity for them. So we're really garnering a lot of interest and a lot of learning going on right now. I think the presence of the LID Center would help move this forward a lot faster, because I know that I get calls all the time for help on design, and as with your staff as well, I can't keep up with those requests. So we need to refer them to people that can respond quickly to those design requests. I use CCAMP extensively. I cannot thank Karen's group enough for providing this fabulous data. The quality of the data, the independence of the data, the accessibility of the data, all of these things are highly valuable. And as a stormwater practitioner, the question I get all the time is, how can I tell if we're getting better or worse? How can I tell if what we're doing is working? CCAMP tells us that. And if it's funded properly, it will tell us that in the future. We can compare the historical data to new data and see what is going on in those watersheds. It represents the bottom line. That is what we all care about. It's the ambient water quality of the water bodies themselves. Again, I support staff's recommendation to add more upper watershed sampling locations, and I would hope that we can weight a lot of our efforts in the Santa Maria River watershed so that it's fair to those impacted communities that we want to use the Guadalupe funds for. So if we can emphasize making sure that we exhaust the possibilities for LID projects in Santa Maria and New Pomo, for example, before we move on forward to the north, that would be, I think, more fair. And also for other projects as well, and adding CCAMP locations, then focusing on problems in the Santa Maria watershed. I need a lot of help in the New Pomo Creek watershed, and I'm really urging that help for LID projects and CCAMP to help as well, and also for the watershed coordinator as well. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Robert Hill, Haiti DeSimone, and then Steve Shemek.
Good evening, members. I'm obviously not Bob Hill. He dresses much better than I do. Unfortunately, he had to run off and teach a class at Cal Poly. I'm Brian Stark, the Executive Director of the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County. He's a direct party of projects proposed through the Dune Stewardship Collaborative, as well as our status as a partner of the American Land Conservancy in their project in Apple Canyon. And we're also the primary project proponent there for the Paradise Beach. As you have questions and any deliberation later, I just thought I'd come introduce myself and let you know that I'll be around to answer those questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Katie DeSimone.
Hi, I'm here from the city of Paso Robles this evening, and I am eager to talk to you, especially after hearing all the assumptions about what municipalities are doing and some very truthful words about how slow we move. I think I was going to say, I turned to page 11 of the staff report. It says some attendees from municipalities came back from an LID conference up in Roanoke Park, all fired up about LID, but again asked us the same questions regarding site-specific implementation. I am that person who came back fired up. The city of Paso Robles is really eager to do LID. To say it lightly, I had my city manager knocking at my door repetitively saying, where are we on LID? I want to do this. And the unfortunate answer back was, hold on, I'm not sure. Because what I saw at Roanoke Park, and I want to get to the specifics of some of your questions, was what exactly is this going to provide? What is this going to give the municipalities? When I was at the conference, I saw bioswales, which I can understand, except I'm in Paso, and we have incredibly clayey soils. So percolation is a problem. And I looked at bioswale, and I say, how can I implement that? And I saw green roofs. Well, does that mean I have to irrigate my roof in Paso because it's 120 degrees in the summer? Is that practical in Paso? I'm not sure I could have a green roof in Paso. I saw developments of communities where they don't have sidewalks or bike paths. And I don't know that that's going to be okay here in the Central Coast in a community that's trying to foster a live-work community with pedestrian-friendly streets and bike paths. So these are some of the things that I'm grappling with that I'm eager to get answers to, and I think an LID Institute with experts that can come to our region and not give me what the East Coast answers look like, but what the West Coast implementation can look like. I'm really eager about this. I think Paso's your model city with the exception of its geographic location. We're far away from Guadalupe, unfortunately. However, we do have Cuesta College campus in our community. We are eager to do this. I do have identified your concern specifically about the timeframes in which I can implement this. I have projects that can go on small scales. I have projects that are coming in large scales. Paso is a high-growth community. We traditionally have some of the highest growth rates in the county. And we look to continue that. We have specific plans right now for large developments called Olson Beachwood, Chandler Ranch Park, and just recently approved at our city council for River Oaks. We have great opportunities to make lasting changes if we can get some help with LID and what it should look like here on the Central Coast. So I urge you to help this move along. We are eager to participate.
Thank you for your comments. Question, have we issued a swamp yet?
Yes.
We have.
Yes.
Is LID a component of your swamp?
It was not. We got in early, although it is part of Attachment 4. And I can be corrected here if I'm wrong. But, yes, it is a component in that the maximum extent practical is an ever-evolving, ever-changing definition. And it evolves and changes, we seek to meet it. And the communication to me is that LID is of utmost importance.
Right. But are you requiring it? In your new project?
Yes. After attending that, one of our major developments coming in is a shopping center that's going to be cornerstoned with Lowe's Shopping, and we are working with them right now. I just had the specific plan for Olson Beachwood come through my review, and I revised it to include LID as part of the scoping in that specific plan. So, yes, it is being addressed. I need the specifics of what the developer does when it comes down to the specifics of the plan and the design.
Oh, okay. Are you requiring any type of stormwater retention or rainfall retention?
That's actually one of the things, one of the other specifics that we've been trying to work with. One of the things at Ronart Park was numeric models to plan your BMPs and your stormwater management techniques and your hydrograph modification. And we're finding that we don't have the expertise here to run those numeric models. Mm-hmm. So in lieu of that, we're trying to find out what ways would work for us.
Right.
I like to try and tell our city council, I think their education is going really well, but we actually have an LID example right in front of our city hall. We have oak trees everywhere. What can you not do? You can't pave over the drip line of an oak tree. So all around there's permeable pavers. So I like to remind the city council and our community that it really can be something simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, to use an old saying, you plant a seed, you grow a tree. It's right out in front of us.
Right.
So.
Great. Thank you for your comments.
Yep.
Mr. Shimmick, Kathy or Katie Matsuyama, and then Gordon Hensley, Karen Blakesley.
Chair Young, board members and staff. I also had good afternoon on my sheet. Good evening. My name is Steve Shimmick. I am the Monterey Coast Keeper. I'm here to support the staff recommendation specifically when it comes to C-Camp, and LID. So with C-Camp, the data is absolutely essential. I mean, there's just no two ways about it. And I think we all know that and see that. So I'm hoping that this is really close to just so obvious that we just move ahead. Long-term data sets are critical. Those ambient data sets are critical, and they're hard to fund. There was actually a funding fair in Sacramento about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and there was a bunch of us that went from place to table to table to table saying, is there any money for monitoring? And it was no. I mean, monitoring, and especially long-term monitoring, is impossible. Endowments are the only way. There have been some efforts to combine data sets and use other data sets. There's a lot of data out there. And frankly, what it all boils down to is that the C-Camp data is the most reliable, the most robust, with the least amount of noise. You know, the other data sets, once you combine them with the C-Camp data, frankly, predictability actually goes down. So C-Camp is essential. LIDS, what can I say about LIDS? I've been fighting this battle up in the Salinas Valley now since Monterey Coast Keeper started. Low-impact development standards are absolutely essential. Development is inevitable. Salinas, you've got 12,500 new homes planned for the Salinas Valley. Being planned right now, are we going to have LIDS in time to meet that development? The LIDS Center will help bring that into reality. Instead of looking at the LID money as you know, the project by project by project, I think that that is the way you have to look at it, but I also hope you look at it as seed money. I can tell you that there is other money waiting to see what you folks do. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. I guess it's Matsuyama, right? But the A looks like a G on this?
It is Matsuyama.
Okay.
My name's Kathy Matsuyama, and I've been waiting since your Watsonville meeting in July to talk to you about this item. I am the Watershed and Natural Resources Manager at the Guadalupe Napomo Dune Center in Guadalupe, and I'm currently the Acting Executive Director of the Dune Center, as well as the Administrator of the Dunes Collaborative. Since October, the Guadalupe Napomo Dunes Collaborative has been working with your staff to develop a suite of water quality projects that closely meet the criteria that you have established for projects that qualify for Guadalupe settlement funding. The Dunes Collaborative is a partnership of federal, state, private, and nonprofit organizations that are committed to the conservation, the preservation, and the restoration of the 18-mile stretch of the California coastline that is the Guadalupe Napomo Dunes, a national natural treasure of 22,000 acres of land supported by more than a half a dozen watersheds, some of the largest ones in our region. Our partners in the collaborative include the Cachuma Resource Conservation District, the California State Parks Oceano District, the Center for Natural Lands Management, Central Coast Salmon Enhancement, the Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District, the County of San Luis Obispo, the County of Santa Barbara, the Dune Center, the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County, Napomo Native Garden, People for the Napomo Dunes, and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who manage the Guadalupe Napomo Dunes National Wildlife Refuge within our area. At a meeting in October, your staff gave us some valuable suggestions about the kind of projects that would meet the criteria that you've established for spending these funds, and we've been working very hard with the help of your staff to come up with a list of 11 projects. We spent a considerable amount of time vetting these projects against a very rigorous set of criteria. We reduced our project list by half and focused in on the projects that most closely meet your criteria of water quality focus, geographic nexus, spill type or violation, beneficial use protection, region-wide use or benefit, leveraged funding, institutional stability and capacity, targets impaired water body, readiness to proceed, and consistency with the Guadalupe Settlement Fund blueprint, which your board has approved. We, in keeping with ecosystem management approach to the work that we do as a collaborative, we are proposing 11 projects in six watersheds: the Meadow Creek Watershed, the Oceano Lagoon Watershed, Arroyo Grande Creek Watershed, Napomo Creek Watershed, Oso Flaco Creek Watershed, and the Santa Maria River Watershed. 11 great projects. We believed that all 11, which total $3.254 million, are great projects. We never expected in a million years that all projects would be funded. We are extremely surprised and hugely disappointed that not even a component of one project has been recommended for approval. So we would respectfully request that you would consider some of the Guadalupe oil spill settlement funding for some of the 11 projects that we have submitted as the Guadalupe Napomo Dunes Collaborative, including the great Dana Adobe project that was submitted. And then two final things. We strongly support the Paradise Beach Acquisition Project. The Land Conservancy, acting as the Land Acquisition Task Force for the Dunes Collaborative, is spearheading that project, and it's hugely important. And I promised Carol Blakesley that I would support the Avila Ranch Acquisition Project as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Dr. Press?
Yeah, just a question. If you had to rank your projects over or against the Avila Ranch and the Paradise Beach, what would you answer that?
I would happily rank them against Lit and Sea Camp. It's a little harder since Avila Ranch kind of just appeared on the radar screen. I think as a professional park planner, a landscape architect, and a watershed planner, setting aside land in perpetuity for the future of all of us, preserving and protecting it always trumps doing a project, no matter what that project is. You can preserve and protect, that's the number one thing you should do.
Okay, so you wouldn't trade, say, Avila Ranch for $950,000 of dunes collaborative
I'd happily trade it in for some Lit or Sea Camp. No, I wouldn't. No. Dr. Press, I wouldn't. I would not. Okay. I'm being honest.
Okay.
I really believe that preservation of the land is much more important. Yeah.
Right. Dr. Hunter?
Yeah, just a quick question. Uh-huh. I think the staff report notes that you have open projects currently with about $8 million in funds pending. Is that right?
I don't think so.
Do you you have open projects now that are being funded by Guadalupe Dunes Settlement Fund?
I'm not sure.
You've completed 10 projects. I'm sorry, I can't find it in my staff report. You've completed 10 projects. You have 9 pending.
The Dunes Collaborative has completed probably 26 projects in its 5 years in existence. Okay. Some large, some small, most focused on natural resource restoration, removing the invasive weed species that Bob Hill talked about at Paradise mm-hmm. Beach. Mm-hmm. We haven't received funding from the Regional Water Board specifically for the Dunes Collaborative projects.
Okay, so but the settlement fund itself, you still have open projects?
We have the Dunes Collaborative has a just shy of $8 million endowment that you saw on the screen as one of the other line items for funding of projects. Yes.
So how far out would those funds carry those
That's
projects?
A permanent endowment. So we earn a piece of an interest on that money every year. It's ranged between $160,000 to $350,000, depending on how the market's doing, mm-hmm. To cover 22,000 acres of land. Mm-hmm. So as you can imagine, it doesn't stretch very far.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay, great. Thanks for clarifying that for me.
You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Sure. Gordon Hensley, Kara Blakesley, Julie Thomas, David Athey. Is that our staff person?
Used to be.
Used to be, okay. Gary Conley, Ronnie Glick, and last is Greg Benincourt. Mr. Hensley.
Gordon Hensley, San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper. I happen to know that Kara has had to leave, so she will not be on your list after me. Good evening. Money is scarce, and the competition is often stiff. And I really want to thank you for giving the staff time for them to go through these proposals to put together a nice package, a good suite of projects that come together with the nexus for this funding. I urge you not to rethink this on the fly. The staff's put in a lot of time in putting this package together for you. I did want to make one point about the staff's supplement. We submitted a letter. However, while we do support the Sea Camp and the LID proposals, we support the entire package as you have it. We are especially interested in Sea Camp and the LID proposals, however. Did I mention that we support the Sea Camp? the Sea Camp, these two projects go together in an incredible way, the Sea Camp and the LID proposal. Sea Camp gives us the kind of data to tell us what the problems are and where they are, and the LID proposal gives us some technical handles and help on what people can do in a practical way to do something about the problems that exist out there. Those two are essential to us. We also believe that the C-Camp project has an incredible history. You have been very helpful in keeping that program going. It is probably without a doubt the biggest bang for your buck. We urge you to take the opportunity to secure the funding for this important project. The LID proposal is indeed visionary, and we encourage you to do what you can to encourage this little baby to move along. You've heard about what's coming forward in the Salinas Valley, in the Santa Maria area, and recently the San Luis Obispo County in their resource management proposals have indicated that as much as 60% of the growth in San Luis Obispo County is going on in the rural areas, in the non-urban areas. The time is right, and I urge you to take the chance to get ahead of the curve on this LID wave. And I thank you and ask you to continue your investment with these funds. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hensley. And did you say that Kara Blakesley was gone?
Yes, she had to pick up her daughter.
Okay.
And she,
is she coming back?
No, she can't come back.
Okay.
So when we close out.
And Julie Thomas, not related to you, right, Michael?
Nope.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Go ahead.
Hi, I'm Julie Thomas. I'm with the Coastal San Luis Resource Conservation District, and I'm here to support the proposal of the Dunes Collaborative. I worked with the group in development of the projects that are being proposed, and in particular, there are three projects that are in that suite of 11 projects that the Coastal San Luis RCD is either partnering on or the major proponent of. And I was wanting to express the sense that the projects really do support the regional board priorities, as have been stated by the staff. As Kathy Matsuyama mentioned, we very carefully went through each project, looking at the regional board priorities and rated each project on how well they met those priorities. There are projects included in the proposal that include contributions towards acquisition of conservation easements along, for example, Corbett Creek. We have $400,000 in match funds from the Coastal Conservancy going towards that project. That would also, once the conservation easement is established, there would be floodplain restoration and enhancement of sediment detention capabilities of that project. This is in a watershed, Arroyo Grande Creek watershed, which has lost 85% of its historic floodplains. The highest priority project, one of them, I don't want to say highest priority, would be the Osa Flaco project that was proposed, which does have multiple components that involves addressing both the sources of pollutants in the Osa Flaco watershed as well as ameliorating some of the effects of the ongoing pollution. It is a somewhat urgent situation given that the Osa Flaco Lake currently only has an average depth of about 3.5 feet and sedimentation is occurring at a rate of approximately 6 inches per year. So there is some urgency in some of these projects, but they do address the Osa Flaco proposal, for example, addresses, it looks at the entire Osa Flaco watershed. It is not looking at just a piece of the problem, and it's looking at addressing multiple components. And I know you have a hard choice to make. These are all good proposals, and the goals are ones that I think most of us, all of us, would support all of the goals. So you've got a hard choice to make. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments. David Athey?
He's not here.
He's not, okay. Gary Conley? Ronnie Glick, and then Greg Benincourt.
Evening, members of the board. Gary Conley from the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. I'm here to talk on behalf of the increased endowment for the C-Camp program. At the sanctuary, we have mandates to protect habitats and water quality within the sanctuary. Of course, the water doesn't stay in the watersheds. Eventually, it gets to the ocean. I spent quite a lot of time working on a project that Karen mentioned. We call it the Central Coast Water Quality Data Synthesis Assessment and Management Project. In order to protect habitats and water quality, we need to understand what the inputs to our system are. It turns out that quite a lot of, as a lot of people have said, quite a lot of what we know about what's coming out of the Central Coast watersheds, we know from the CCAMP program. The data that they've collected has allowed us to initiate partnerships with organizations such as the Monterey Bay Aquarium Research Institute, who are using satellite imagery in conjunction with CCAMP data sets and other data sets to investigate how watershed inputs might be related to algal blooms in the Monterey Bay. Just an example. This usefulness of the data is largely a result of the high quality, the great spatial coverage of the data, the suite of parameters that are measured within the program, and the temporal extent and completeness of the data sets. Through this process of the SAM project, we've also been able to assess quite a few of the data gaps that exist on the Central Coast. Karen mentioned a few of those, and a great thing about having all the data compiled together in this data set that we now have is that we, by knowing what we know, we also know what we don't know. And some of the gaps that the increased resources for the CCAMP program could fill, it's not that CCAMP's not measuring them, it's that by and large, in general, no one is measuring these things. So we don't know about these pollutants entering the waterways. From anyone. One of the big questions that we have at the sanctuary is how changes in concentrations and loads, how these things are changing over time. Steve Chimek alluded to the idea that by combining data sets from multiple different programs, we're not nearly as effective for understanding how things are changing over time compared to by maintaining long-term monitoring programs at certain stations from single programs. So our conclusion from that study was that the maintenance of long-term monitoring stations is going to be absolutely essential if we're to understand how things like anthropogenic changes in watersheds and watershed-based pollutants are changing over time. And the recommendation is certainly to stabilize the funding for such long-term programs, because such data gaps and absences of data absolutely confound our ability to understand how things are changing over time, as well as relationships between those changes and oceanographic and ecosystem processes within the marine sanctuary and on the Central Coast.
Thank you for your comments.
Thank you.
Ronnie Glick.
Good evening. My name is Ronnie Glick. I'm the Senior Environmental Scientist for California State Parks Oceano Dunes District. Why am I here? I get to manage receiving water bodies in the Guadalupe Nipomo Dunes Complex. I manage Pismo Lake Ecological Reserve, Oceana Lagoon, the Pismo Creek Estuary, Arroyo Grande Creek Estuary, portions of Oso Flaco Creek, and also a good portion of Oso Flaco Lake. I'm very interested in the disbursement of these Guadalupe settlement funds and how they may impact the lands and the water bodies that I am responsible for managing for the benefit of all Californians. Why am I not here? I am not here to evaluate the merits of the projects that have been proposed here. Your staff have done an excellent job of talking about these projects. I am here to talk about the merits of the projects that are not in your staff recommendation. Working through the Dunes Collaborative, State Park submitted three projects for the water bodies that we manage. Number one was on the Pismo Lake Ecological Reserve. Number two Oceano Lagoon, and number three was a project that was mentioned by the Coastal San Luis RCD, which was a project on Oso Flaco Lake and in the Oso Flaco watershed. We felt these were good projects and that they were a very close match with the criteria that this board established for the Guadalupe Settlement Funds. I want to recognize that there's always more that we want to do and not enough money, and that this settlement represents a really great opportunity to do some big things locally and throughout the region. However, at the end of the day, I'm managing an impaired water body, and I need to deal with the implications of managing that water body. We talked a little bit about, well, do we acquire the property or do we spend money managing the property? Certainly, those are two very large battles. Obviously, you can't manage a water body unless you own the land and have a significant influence over the inputs into that land. But as a companion to that, you have to be able to responsibly manage that property. And I feel that, you know, right now we're not funding the essential management of these water bodies. So, end of the day, we have impaired water bodies. We have beneficial uses that are impaired. And if we don't use the money for this now, we obviously have to partner and find other opportunities to address the significant challenges that we face on our state park lands. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Greg Benincourt.
Good evening. Good news is I'm the last one. I'm actually here to urge you to support the funding of the Avila Ranch project. I'm representing a coalition of outdoor lovers and conservationists that, in one way at least, are kind of your shock troops that you don't even know about. There are a group of us trail users that actually do trail design and construction and trail maintenance, and the focus of our attention on those a couple of Sundays a month where we're out digging in the dirt is to minimize the erosion that comes from established trails in state parks, in the Forest Service, in county parks in San Luis Obispo County. So we're out there kind of putting our time where our interests are. As I listened to you this afternoon for quite a while, I kind of heard the focus of your attention and listened to you talk about low-impact development and bang for the buck, basically. And what I realize is that the Avila Ranch project and the Paradise Bees project, as this young woman said a minute ago, are, I think, as much bang for the buck as you're likely to get. In the Avila Beach project, I'm sorry, the Avila Ranch project, you're have the opportunity to protect kind of the quintessential coastal landscape, Oakland woodlands, grasslands, three individual watersheds, and allow for low-impact development, literally very low-impact development. I can, as I listen to you talk today and listen to Caremaker presentation, I realize this is, in my mind, a no-lose proposition for you. You pay, you know, you promise to pay 1/25th of the cost. You don't have to pay it unless the other 24th parts are acquired, and you have the benefit of having met your goal of looking at kind of landscape breadth accomplishments. I don't think you can lose on that. At any rate, in addition to those are my comments, I promised Kara that I would read her or a list of supporters that she gave me for this project because she didn't get a chance to do that. Can I do that for her on her 3 minutes?
No, but you could wrap up your comments very quickly.
I suggest that you support.
All right,
I'll do that. Ruth Coleman, Director, California Department of Parks and Rec. Sam Souchette, Executive Director, California State Coastal Conservancy. Assemblyman Sam Blakesley. That's probably not a surprise. State Senator Abel Maldonado, Jerry Lenthal, County Board of Supervisors, San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, and that was a unanimous vote yesterday. Conservation groups, American Land Conservancy, Cayugas Land Conservancy, Central Coast Concerned Mountain Bikers, Citizens for Vehicle Freedom, Pomo Dunes, California Native Plant Society, Friends of Black Lake Canyon, Friends of Napomo Community Park, Friends of Point Sal, the Land Conservancy of San Luis Obispo County, and the San Luis Obispo Parks Open Space and Trails Organization. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Can you leave that with us, please?
I'm glad to.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Does any other member of the public wish to address the board on this agenda item at this time? Okay. Comment is closed. Public comment is closed. It's back to the board.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Can we, is it all right if we mention some other comments that
yes.
we received? That,
yes.
Because you've got a ton of paper here.
Right.
Because we've had comments just rolling in
right.
this week. So Michael is just going to kind of summarize where they fell on which side of which fence.
Okay.
Okay, you did get a supplemental sheet several days ago, and that included quite a few comments. I'm going to do this really quickly for the sake of time here. The top block there, those were folks who encouraged the board to support the Dunes Collaborative Projects. The middle listing there is the Agricultural Watershed Coalition. You heard from Kevin Merrill today. The bottom block are folks who offered support for what the Water Board staff's proposals. And then after the supplemental sheet, we got still more comments. Another comment from statewide Coast Keeper Alliance office. You got comments previously in the supplemental sheet from other Coast Keeper offices, but this one was from the statewide office. The Surf Rider Foundation, Moss Landing Marine Labs, San Francisco Estuary Institute, UC Davis Center for Land and Water Management, the Resource Conservation District of Santa Cruz, the San Benito County Cattlemen's Association, which was quite a remarkable letter, the City of Soledad, the Coastal Commission, and Association of Bay Area Governments. All of those offered strong support for staff's proposals and urged the board to adopt the proposal. The City of Atascadero, Dave Athey is not here today. He had an alternative proposal. He is proposing that the board allocate some funds to support an upcoming basin plan amendment, which would require plans for on-site wastewater management systems. And so his request was that the board provide funding to do that, to create those plans for individuals. And that's it.
Okay. All right. Back to the board, Mr. Briggs?
Well, I wanted to try to
okay.
narrow it down for you.
All right.
So we got a next slide there. I want to try to break this down. The way we categorize this is that with the Dunes Collaborative Projects, we didn't think the proposals were strong enough to rank with the projects that we did recommend. So one thing would be to improve those proposals, pursue other grants more geared to those projects. As we've talked with the Dunes Collaborative folks when we met with them, there's a world of opportunity right now in terms of grants. It's really an unprecedented time. And actually, in response to the questions that Dr. Hunter had, I'm reminded that there is that $8 million restoration fund, which has been used pretty much exclusively by the Dunes Collaborative for projects that they proposed. And that money is available, and to the extent that these projects are useful to improve habitat, I would think that they would be possibly fundable under those restoration funds. Moving on. So we on the left there we have CCAMP and LID, and I think it's fair to say that we have overwhelming support. By that I don't mean unanimous support, as I was just talking about with the previous slide, but really overwhelming support from a broad spectrum of individuals, local folks, non-governmental agencies, state agencies, statewide agencies, and it's pretty phenomenal. It is performance-based, as opposed to a lot of grant projects where if it fails, it's you know, maybe a lesson learned, but it's money down the drain. In this case, we're setting it up as an endowment, and with the idea that if we don't perform, if they're not effective, the money will be available for higher priorities. We're recommending that you fund the Paradise and Avila Ranch projects. You've heard good support from those pretty much across the board, including from the Dunes Collaborative. And I would say that I really consider the Paradise Beach to come at least out of part of the Dunes Collaborative. It's the Land Conservancy, and you heard support from several members from the Dunes Collaborative. So I think that's a significant recommendation to approve that project. With the wells, I really see that as a part of the originally funded project from these funds, but we got the good suggestion of pursuing cleanup and abatement account funds, so our recommendation there would be to include that funding, but would only be unless the request for cleanup and abatement account funds is unsuccessful. There was another proposal that no one has mentioned, but it was in the write-up. That was from the Napomo Community Services District to fund their sewer system. Our response was that they have a revenue program to fund that. For the David Athey City of Atascadero proposal, we think that, again, that would be a better fit for other grant possibilities, specifically the Earworm Integrated Regional Water Management Plans. There are $25 million grants for various counties that where that might be a good fit for that kind of work. And plus, that just came in this week and isn't really fleshed out. So, do I have another slide there? Our recommendation is to fund the sort of the fixed projects that I mentioned, the acquisitions and the wells, and then with the low-impact development assistance and with CCAMP, as we've emphasized, it's kind of a money-back guarantee in that we assess effectiveness. If they're not, if they are effective, we continue. If they're ineffective, we reallocate. In terms of the questions about specificity, I would suggest that you go ahead and approve the staff recommendation with the direction to us that we will describe how we are specifically using the funds in our reports. We've included in here quarterly reports to you, and so that'll give us an opportunity to talk about the specifics that Michael was describing in answer to that question, but actually documenting what actually happens. And also the $2 million allocation to low-impact development does require Phase 1 to be effective. And then the final part that is perhaps a little loose has to do with the ag coordinator issue. On page 7 of the supplemental sheet that I was referring to in answering your question, our recommendation was to steer remaining funds. For example, with the wells, we hope we overshot in terms of the amount that's needed. And if we get cleanup and abatement account funds, all that money would be available. Anyway, to reserve those kinds of funds. And then when the Ag Coalition comes back in whether it's September or when it's October, that money would be available for the board to consider if their proposal is worthy. And I don't know if we need to adjust the resolution to address that.
Well, my concern about the resolution on the on that part, I think that I don't think you need to adjust the resolution, but you could add that you would that a number, paragraph number 6, that excess funding up to a certain amount. I wouldn't want to say all of it because if it's $1 million because something else falls through, but up to a certain amount or something would be for watershed coordinators. You could add something like that. But I did want to say about the LID funding is that the way the resolution is written, it could be interpreted that you put the money right into an endowment right now, but then Roger's saying, well,
if it doesn't work, we would redirect it. But it needs to, the agreement would need to be written properly so that, in fact, you can do that, because an endowment could be considered a gift and you can't take it back. So actually, so I think it's written okay here to make sure that happens, but that would be my concern, that if you really do want to have it made available, if it doesn't work out, the agreement needs to be written properly to assure that. So.
Okay. Anything else, Mr. Briggs?
Nope.
Okay, Mr. Hayashi?
What are we going to do for the, where we've agreed that $100,000 is not enough?
We haven't agreed to anything yet. We're just, you're starting the discussion as to what we're going to agree to.
All right. If we think that $100,000 is not enough, and it takes $200,000 to get this campus off the ground, is the money going to come from what would have been in the endowment to fund that?
That would be one option. In other words, reducing the endowment to $1.9
million. Is that where it's coming from? Is that what we're looking at? Or I don't know.
Well, Karen will kick me if I mention another option. So.
It's up to the board where it comes from. It's your choice. If you wanted to do that.
But if we took it from the endowment now, we could always fund it back later with something else to bring the endowment back up to whatever it needs to be.
You mean with possibly a supplemental environmental project or
something
like that?
Yeah, I don't know exactly.
Or additional funds that are available after all the things cleared out.
Right.
Well, let me ask you, fellow board members, this first is kind of to all of us. Do we want to address the Dunes collaborative projects that are, you know, what we want to do with those, if anything? I mean, are we going
to... Well, it would be nice to fund all of them if we had the money to do that.
Right.
It's not feasible to do that. We only got so many dollars.
Right.
My preference are somewhat what the staff is, except that I do want that watershed coordinator funded.
Right.
I want to make sure that continues on. I think that's extremely important
right. To
us. And I can remember when the staff brought the C-CAMP. It was a visionary program back in those days for monitoring. And I think this is the same thing for the LID. Mm-hmm. It's a visionary program, as Dr. Press has pointed out. But I think it's going to be the future of water and stormwater discharges and what happens to it and where is it going. So I'm a strong supporter of that, as well as the C-CAMP and, of course, the watershed coordinator. I think that really has to be funded. And my question to Mr. Briggs, and he's saying that, you know, wait till September. I hear from the agency is that they may not have enough money to maybe not get to that September point to fund their watershed coordinator. And then there is no guarantee in September that any money would be available at that particular time. So I want to make sure we appropriate, at least I have one board member, make sure we have those funds available.
Well, my understanding is that you're funded through November.
That's correct. Okay. And we would have the knowledge and by the September-October meeting that what excess funds we would have.
Right, and they've already submitted a proposal. We've given them some feedback on how to address some questions we had about that proposal. Hopefully improve it, but we were thinking that timing-wise, we have that opportunity between now and, say, the September-October board meeting to get that in line for you.
Okay.
We're not looking at the amount of funds that were originally used for the original grant.
Okay.
Just one follow-up question on that.
Mr. Hodgson was waiting, and then we'll get right to you.
Okay. It just had to do with the amount of watershed coordinator. Since you're saying that it's dependent upon what monies might be available, what is the funding need to keep the watershed coordinator in place? I haven't heard that number. How much do they actually need to, say, fund one more year?
I think it's in excess of $100,000 per year.
So we're looking at, if we were to ask to fund the entire cost for a year.
The current funding is roughly $125,000. That's your funding to us with a 40% match. And we have had difficulty making the 40% match. The proposal that was submitted was actually a proposal that was submitted to the Department of Conservation for a watershed coordinator. It's exclusively for the Santa Maria River watershed, and that came to about $329,000 funding request from the Department of Conservation, and the total grant was about $439,000. So that's just to do that project. That was the cost of that project.
The
proposal that you have that we submitted, that was the budget that was submitted along with that proposal.
So the proposal you submitted to regional board is for $400,000?
It was the proposal that we submitted to Department of Conservation. That's what you have in your hands. I actually had some family illness and took family leave for the past month. So that was the best that we could submit to you. It definitely needs to be tweaked. It probably needs to be expanded to cover a larger area. But the budget that was submitted with that proposal was for $439,000, and it was $329,000 was the funding request. So the match, funding plus match, was $439,000.
For how long a period of time?
That was for 3 years.
Okay.
And so when does that
expire? We should know in March.
Expire.
That would expire. We should know in March if we're going to be awarded that. The question.
That was submitted for what time period?
2008 through 2010.
Okay.
And we should know early March if we will be awarded that amount.
And does that assume that the Water Board is contributing any part of that?
We were creative in discussing that because we didn't know if we would be funded.
But I guess the question is, then, how much do you need from the Department of Conservation, and how much are you looking to the regional board to meet the $439,000 budget for 3 years?
To do that project, we need $439,000 from somebody.
Yeah.
From somebody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I guess I'm confused because you mentioned that there's a 40% match on the funds you have now.
The NIFWIF funds had a 40% match.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's gone. That's gone away now. You're in a new.
Well, if we get the Department of Conservation grant, that will apply towards that 40% match because it will start receiving funds in 2008.
Okay, now I got it. Thanks.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Any other questions?
No. Thank you. Mr. Hodgson.
I just want to make sure that I've got this straight in my mind. We've got the total funds that we're talking about being able to allocate is $8.76 million, and the staff proposal is to dissipate all those funds. Is that correct?
Yes, with the exception that the $120,000 is hopefully a high amount for the wells. Correct?
Yes. Right, but there was also that other statement that if there was anything left over, it would go into CCAMP.
Yes, because if the board makes this allocation for the amounts that we have listed in the staff report, there's a possibility that there will be some change left over.
Okay. Is there some urgency in dissipating all these funds? I don't, I'm not sure I understand why we're trying to allocate everything right now and have nothing in reserve for some other project that may seem worthwhile tomorrow.
Well, I think we've been semi-frugal in that we've had these funds for 10 years and have waited to allocate basically a second large round of funds. We've had other intermediate grants. For example, the ag coordinator position was in between the first round and this round, if you will. There is some urgency for the land acquisition projects because of their timing. There will be some urgency as far as the ag coordinator position, and we see a large degree of urgency for getting going with LID assistance because of where we are with the development of these techniques and where development in the region is, as you've heard from City of Paso Robles and we've seen some of the letters. So I think there is a degree of urgency there, and certainly with Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program, Karen talked about the benefits and the additional scope of work that the program would be able to do if the earnings from the endowment are not there. Those benefits would be delayed.
If at our next meeting we hear about a wonderful project that we want to fund, are there other sources of funds that we have under our control, or will we have already dissipated whatever we have to work with?
This is the largest fund that the board has allocation authority over. The back flushing settlement, those are essentially all allocated.
Yes.
So I think the answer is no. There aren't any other funds.
There aren't any funds that would be readily available. There are tens of millions of dollars in grant funds coming along through different grant cycles. Tens of millions of dollars. Tens of millions earmarked for just the Central Coast.
Since I'm not used to the flow of this, can you give me some guidance as to what timing is for money's coming in?
There are Prop 50 and Prop 80. I don't know if our grant manager is still here or not, but she would be much better to answer this question than myself. Attachment 1, I believe, to the staff report was a description of the upcoming grant funds and the cycle, the timelines that they're on. There's a couple of them that are major. There's one coming up this summer that is $90 million statewide. And so when, if a project were to become aware of a project that we thought was worthy of funding, then we would do everything we could to get it in one of these cycles. There are also two pending projects that Roger mentioned earlier. They're integrated regional water management program projects. The County of Santa Barbara submitted a proposal, and the County of San Luis Obispo submitted a proposal in round one, and they were both invited back to round two. Santa Barbara's is a $25 million proposal. San Luis Obispo County's is a $12 million proposal. Both of those are on track to be funded. And so if a project came up that fit within their what they intended to use those funds for, we could steer the project proponent to those sources as well.
Dr. Hutter has reminded me that we have a list here of all sorts of funds. When I read that, I thought, well, this is a wonderful wish list of great things, but I don't have any history to know whether it is likely that this particular board is going to have any control over any of these funds. I assume there will be lots of people looking for part of this money.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Any source of money.
Is it realistic to think that in the relatively near future that some of these funds will be under the control of this board?
We have almost $30 million in new grant funds that the board is managing this year.
Mm. And well, but we.
But he asked about these funds that are on these three pages.
Well, and also we want to be clear that we are not the granting agency.
Right.
We provide input, say, to the State Board or to the Department of Water Resources as far as what our priorities are and we evaluate project proposals. We have different roles. And once the State Board awards a grant, then we may be the grant manager. But it's not, I think what you're referring to is this board making a decision mm-hmm. about those funds. So I want to make sure you're clear about that.
Precisely. I just want to get it really clear that we are now allocating such funds as are under our control.
Right.
And if
right.
we come up with other things we might wish to do, we're probably going to have to wait a while.
Right. There's a distinction there.
Okay.
But our record, the record of this board in securing funds and or recommending funding that is then approved through bond money. Bond money is very good. There's also a this region makes more use of supplemental environmental projects than most regions, and so that's another source of funding. And of course, it's opportunistic and unpredictable, but it's not. Several years of data suggest that it's growing. If the past is prologue, this is not the only money there's going to be. There's going to be substantially more money than $8.76 million coming in the future.
You know, Mr. Hodgson, I think there's no question these are the only funds that we really can control and have the purse strings over. Today, that's right. We don't know what's going to happen down the line. And I think that's why staff has come up with these two things that are really kind of big picture items, vision items that we wouldn't necessarily be able to fund otherwise. And we'll have spinoffs. The LID money, we're trying to push a paradigm shift in the way land is managed to help with pollution problems throughout the whole region. We've been thinking about that for about 4 years. So in the four-year period, since that idea started to rise, nothing else has supplanted that, you know, as being anything, you know, greater that we might want to fund. Something could come up, and we wouldn't have the money for it. You're right. But I don't know that we would see another big vision item come up. Like LID or getting C-Camp, you know, more funded. Go ahead.
I have first a couple questions and then a recommendation to think about. First of all, your staff report on page 2 of the staff report says that $8.76 million is unallocated, but you're recommending allocation of $8.72 million. So there's $400,000 there that you haven't spent.
$40,000.
Oh, that's the chump change, right?
Yeah.
Okay. But a related point is that you had $500,000 that had been allocated to land acquisition that was still that was money that was allocated. It's not in the pool of unallocated. It was allocated, but it wasn't encumbered, really. So it's out there in the ether still, but it's real money. It's all it's green.
Correct.
So first question is, what's the status of that? How tied is it to the prior project? You mentioned yourself that it might be available for stewardship. But
yes.
Presumably, it's available for acquisition as well.
Yes, the board. It's up to the board. The board allocated $2.5 million to the acquisition of property in the Pomo Dunes complex.
Uh-huh.
And if the board approves the Paradise Beach project, that will be $2 million. The other $500,000 was set aside for stewardship.
Uh-huh.
The board. I wasn't at the board meeting at that time, so I'm going by what I've read in the file now. And my impression is the board had similar concerns about stewardship, you know, buying the property and then not being able to take care of it. So they wanted to have some money set aside for that purpose. And what ended up happening was that $500,000 endowment was being used by, and I think staff made the decision that the Dune Center would get the interest from that $500,000 to do stewardship-type work or water quality project type work. And the Dune Center did use the interest from that money for that purpose. The money stayed in the original account, and our at times the interest level, the interest rate, or the interest earnings were very low on the account. And so there was not a lot of money there from that $500,000 down. We generally predict 5%, so it would be $25,000 per year. At times it was less than that, significantly less than that. So the utility of it was low. And So the board, and there are staff who have been managing that grant, or that endowment, regional board staff who have been managing that endowment, have recently said to Roger and I that we should consider reallocating those funds.
Okay. The board giveth and the board taketh away.
Yes.
And moreover, we heard from the Land Conservancy that they felt that they had the stewardship capacity for, and now we're talking about the Paradise Beach, for managing that property. So I'll sort of put that out there. To another question, what was the magical nature of the $950,000 allocation to Avalor Ranch? We heard that at the very end of the discussion, we heard that, in fact, they were trying to raise $24 million. They had $350,000 solid. They had $12 million in semi-solid, and were confident that they could go. But why 950?
I don't know. That's the proposal that they submitted. I didn't ask them why that number.
Was that the total cost of their option?
I don't understand.
They lose their option to they were
to buy the lease.
Buy the lease if they didn't put down 950. Is that?
Oh, I don't think so. They didn't Kara didn't say
anything.
I wouldn't
think so, because I think you would lose the option money if you didn't exercise it, and they were saying that we would get the money back if they couldn't
go forward. Okay, all right. Well, then in light of all that, and in response a little bit to Mr. Hodgin, the staff's recommendation to endow CCAMP further and to start a new endowment for LID represent 15% of the original Guadalupe settlement of $43 million to the state. It's not very much. The by all accounts, the Paradise Beach and the Avalor Ranch acquisitions are supported by the Dune Center and meet a geographic nexus. My thought here is that if we take that $500,000 that is still hanging out there, if we whittle away a little bit of the Avalor Ranch money, because I'm a little bit underwhelmed that they've raised that they've gone a long way in getting progress towards that $24 million, but if there's no magic aspect to 950, if it could be 500 and still be determinative, then why not save some money there? So my thought would be, what about leaving some money somewhere between 500,000 and a million that could be for projects that the Dunes Collaborative and people working in that geographic nexus would propose for at some future date. So that's not allocating the money now. It's saying the proposals need more work. We're not ready to evaluate those. Let's put some money aside there. That would be maybe $500,000, maybe a bit more, I don't know. One, two, set aside some money for the watershed coordinator. Three, put money into the CCAMP endowment. Maybe not $4.65 million, maybe $4 million, maybe $4.2 million. Put $2 million into the LID Center, but give the LID Center a bigger startup, a quarter of a million. Give Paradise Beach its $900,000, and then Avalor Ranch some smaller amount. I think that we can do all those. And in terms of
It doesn't blow all our money because it leaves a little bit of money for the geographic, the really tight geographic nexus. It also endows money, which is not money that's going away, or rather it puts it in an account that we can pull back if we find that those are not working. So that, to me, honors all of these very important proposals and still gives some future wiggle, especially in the watershed coordinator, in the money for the very best dunes projects, and then of course in the nature of the endowment.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Press, one thing you should be aware of is that we reprioritize the factors to be considered, and the geographical nexus, you know, was downgraded significantly.
I understand, which is why I'm not saying that that we should. Well, I'm not agreeing with the Dune Center that we should take $3.4 million,
right,
$3.25 million. But in a way, my reasoning is that this is the last. That money, if we say call it $500,000, will be the last money that projects or proposals that are aimed at that tight geographic nexus can apply for in from this fund. That's my reasoning there.
Okay.
Which is, and it's a small percentage.
But it could be anything else could apply for those funds.
I should think so.
Like LID or CCAMP,
well,
or
but,
the watershed coordinator.
But putting it out there, but leaving it out there, and communicating to the to the folks down in the Dune Center that that it's there to compete for, and that really improved proposals stand a good chance of getting funded.
I would be careful about saying anything about what might get funded and may not be.
Okay, well,
from their correspondence, they thought that they were going to get things funded,
right, well,
at some point. And I think you have to be very cautious.
But you can say to the staff have already recommended that those proposals get improved and come back.
For other funds, not these.
Right, but you can always make the same recommendation that for
right.
these funds,
okay.
without saying that you would fund them if they were better. You can just say, come back.
Okay.
You've
got to
be careful.
That's, see, some of the projects, you know, and I haven't commented on the Dunes projects myself, but some of them on their face are very localized to me. I mean, there's a few fence projects in here and things like that. And to me, that would be kind of a waste of the money to what we're trying to do and affect change over a broad area. There's other places to get money for, you know, fencing projects. I also don't like, you know, possibly cutting it up into little pieces, because I think that, yes, we could do a lot of good in a little area, but we're trying to leverage a paradigm shift. So I'm not opposed to setting money aside. I'm not opposed to having them compete with some funds that are remaining. I don't want to give anybody false hopes that anything will get funded one way or the other, whether it's, you know, CCAMP or LID. If LID doesn't pan out to do what we hope it will.
Oh, fair enough, but you're still funding the paradigm shift.
Yeah, I think that's correct. We have to give that a try.
I agree.
There's no question in my mind. Otherwise, we'll never know if that's going to work or not. You know, and CCAMP to me is indispensable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mr. Hodgen?
I think we want to move towards making some decisions. I'm not really in favor of allocating all the funds under our control, and it seems to me that if other monies are likely to be coming in the future, then we can always come back to any of these projects that we think we underfunded and give them more money. And to kind of come to some kind of conclusion, could we take each of the recommended items and make a decision about them, or at least those that we can make a decision about. If we could take them, you know, for easier for me to understand, if we take one at a time and decide what we're going to do.
Let's before we do that, and it's a good suggestion, Mr. Shallcross, any thoughts on any of this? I haven't heard from you yet. No, you don't have to say anything, but
I'm happy with staff's recommendation.
Okay. All right, Mr. Hayashi.
I'm leaning forward.
You want to fund the watershed coordinator's position first, right?
Well, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we're here for.
Okay.
No. But you know, I'm going toward the way Daniel's going.
Okay.
I think to reallocate a few funds. And then, and I agree with Mr. Hodges that we should, you know, keep a few dollars in the bank for a rainy day.
Okay.
I mean, and we're not jeopardizing anybody's project by just taking a little bit of money off the top and holding it. I mean, I don't see it jeopardizing any project.
I do want to come back,
Mr. Shallcross.
Yeah.
Shoot me.
No. I was just not wanting to carry this on any longer. But basically, I would like to see, you know, CCAMP, you know, funded at the level that they're asking. I think if we move that a little, I'm not real happy with the Avila Ranch. If we didn't fund that at all, that wouldn't break my heart, because I think it's a weird deal.
Yeah.
I think it's weird. It's strange. And the thing is, we're probably going to get our money back anyway. If they can only raise $350,000 and they've only got, what, 9 months to go,
right?
We'll probably get the money back anyway. I'd rather hold on to it and maybe allocate it to some of these other things. As far as holding on to the money for a rainy day, how long are we going to hold on to it? And we've had it for 10 years. It's a rainy day. The water quality is not great.
Yeah.
We, you know, our whole mission is to get these funds out there to do things to help water quality, not to hold on to it. So, but, you know, folks want to do that, that's fine. I'll go. All these ideas sound pretty good to me.
Okay.
That's just my two cents.
All right, let's try to streamline this. Do you want to take each of these one by one?
I have a proposal.
As long as you have the water coordinator.
Well.
Because it's not listed.
It's not listed, and we don't know what it's going to need. You know, whether it's going to get funded from this other grant that they've got out there or not. You know, and there is. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, it's if we appropriate the money now,
right?
We know it's there,
right?
If they don't need the money, then we can reappropriate it. I'm just talking to the chair.
You want to appropriate it now?
I want to make sure that program continues.
Okay. How much do we need to appropriate for that?
I didn't hear a total dollar amount.
$439,000.
Well, that was the total package.
One program, yeah.
3 years.
Three years.
For 3 years.
Less 40%.
Less 40%.
No.
To apply towards
that. Why don't you come back up here to the mic and break those dollars down for us again? Because I didn't hear, I heard the total amount, but I didn't hear the breakdown.
The 5-year grant that we have received was roughly $125 per year. That's what we received.
$125,000
per year. That's what we received from the regional board with a 40% match. So it's $125,000 plus $30,000 per year, roughly $150,000.
Can you hold that thought for just a second? Because the staff report says there was, in 2003, was $658,000 allocated.
And if you do the math, it comes to about $125,000 a year, but there's a 40% match on top of it.
On top of the 658.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm with you.
Okay. And then, so the Department of Conservation Watershed Grant that we applied for was to help with that match. That was to fulfill the grant requirement for this past grant. Okay. And so, but the point I was making about the cost of the project is it is for one watershed, and the rough estimate of the cost for that project is $439,000. So it'd be, so your cost, if let's say you were to fund that one project, it would be $329,000 plus the match, which brings it to about $430,000.
Okay. All right.
And the match is probably a little more realistic because we basically had to go to volunteer partners, and they had to commit their time and gave us their volunteer rates for that time. So it's probably much more realistic than the 40%, because when the coordinator position was first created, the discussion between the coalition and the regional board is we don't know what kind of match we're going to need. And so it was kind of a dartboard exercise.
Okay. Dr. Press has a proposal.
Sure.
I just,
okay.
And it's going to kind of take care of the issue.
Here's my proposal. 4.65. Oh, wait. First of all, what do we actually have to work with? We have 9.26 to work with. 9,000,026, if you count the 500,000. Okay? All right. So 4.65 to C-Camp. 2.25 to LID, $120,000 to the Wells, $900,000 to Paradise.
And
no money to Avila Ranch. Okay. That leaves $1.34 million. And I say we don't say anything about it right now. We just leave it alone. And we leave it alone long enough to get through the watershed coordinator grant cycle, blah, 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 September, October, November, until we really know how you're doing, and you come back, and so on. And then we'll then we'll entertain other proposals when we have enough clarity on how all this has gone, because we might not use it all on the Wells, and so on. Okay? So that gives us flexibility. It starts off the endowments.
And it leaves something in the bank.
And leaves some in the kitty.
All right.
I move that.
There's some conditions, though. With Paradise, we had those concerns about land use.
Yeah.
I did draft up some ideas for that.
Okay.
That Michael has on the computer over there, I think.
It's on the desktop.
On the desktop.
Okay. And the $120,000 for the Wells, you know, that I want to make sure that we can't get other funds first.
Yeah, we ask for that for the cleanup abatement account.
Okay, but I want to make sure that's part of the motion.
Yeah, right.
It's not working.
I need the thumb drive.
Password?
Francis's password is... It's probably a bagpipe.
Yeah, because of my bagpipe music on.
Why don't you go ahead and start talking about your wording changes?
Okay, so the first one would be to add to the on the resolution the number 3, which is on page 5 of the resolution, where it says, this is on the Paradise Beach, and it would say, conditional upon the executive officer's determination that the grantees meet all contract requirements, and so it would add what's up there, and include deed restrictions that result in the maintenance of the natural state of property, restrict road development, prohibit off-road vehicle use, and include deed prescriptions, I don't know if that's the right word, but to prevent degradation of the natural value of the property.
Well,
something like that.
I think what we wanted was the natural ecological function of the land.
All right.
You might really address this.
You might say include affirmative deed requirements or deed prescriptions, if you like, deed prescriptions, but...
Do you need the language now for this motion?
No, but just as long as that is... Yeah. Close enough.
Well, you might
it's
say to
close enough,
to,
but I think we want
To promote sound ecological functions and the degradation of natural value of property.
Okay.
Well, did we want to restrict road development or
prohibit road development except for.
Well, that's why she said
management.
That's why I said restrict, so it includes management. But.
Okay.
And then you had just said you didn't want to offer a vehicle use. I just threw that
out. Right,
in.
Right. Degradation of natural value and the ecological functions.
So at the very end, Michael, and
degradation
preserve.
Of natural value and. No, go to the right.
Keep going.
To the right.
You've already got natural value.
Natural value and.
There. Natural value and the ecological functions of the property.
I hate it when 50 people are watching.
Okay, and then the second one, if you're not going to approve the Avila property, then the second one add to the last sentence of number four. Why do you move up? You don't need. And then the number five was the wells. And then have unless the wells may be removed using funds. This would be use the funds from here unless they can.
Yeah. Is the cleanup and abatement account the only state water board account that could potentially be used for this?
Yes.
Okay.
Isn't there an abandoned well fund?
There's a abandoned and recalcitrant account,
there's
but that would but that would not apply.
These are our wells.
Yeah. Right.
Unless we're recalcitrant.
So that was it.
Don't ask,
so my motion is the budget that I proposed with the with council's amendments to the resolution.
I second.
Okay. Any other board discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm not sure what the motion is, but I still want to go back and look at each item individually. Otherwise, I have to vote no on the whole issue.
Okay, you want to look
at... just reiterate the motion.
I'll reiterate the motion.
Yeah.
I think it covers each item.
The motion was to fund the C-Camp endowment, to increase the C-Camp endowment by $4.65 million, to endow the LID with $2 million and provide $250,000 in startup funds for a total of $2.25 million, to... provide $120,000 for the abandoned wells unless the cleanup and abatement or cleanup account an abatement account pays for that, to provide $900,000 for the Paradise Beach property acquisition with the deed restriction and prescription language added there, leaving a balance of $1.34 million in the settlement account that we don't say anything about now. It's just that is for future
consideration.
That's the exact nature of my motion.
Dave, did that help at all? Yeah.
I don't want motions.
Okay.
That's why I asked to break it down.
Right. Okay. Right. Well, we have a motion.
And we have a second.
We have a second. There's a request for the Conservancy to speak.
Yeah.
I'll give you 1 minute.
Thank you.
Okay.
I would only need 30 seconds.
Okay, go ahead.
In draft, Brian Stark from the Land Conservancy,
yeah.
In drafting deed restrictions, it's a very careful kind of a procedure for us. I think the best way to go about this is a slightly more generic. When we work in conservation easements and restrict, we know that sometimes just saying no roads isn't really the right way. It's about how the roads are done. Of course, we don't really want roads out there either. But affirmative deed restrictions for maintenance, I'm concerned that means that we're being required to maintain it in a certain way, you know, when ultimately the property may be transferred. I think a more appropriate statement would be include deed restrictions that result in the maintenance of the natural state of the property. And let us write the deed restrictions the way they should be.
Okay. Include deed restrictions.
Take out the word affirmative?
Yeah.
Affirmative implies that we...
So you want to take that word out?
Yeah. Take out the word.
Yeah, I was trying to keep it somewhat general because we need to negotiate.
And off-road vehicles, like if we wanted to use a quad as part of the weed management program, Does that mean that you couldn't use any motorized vehicle? You know, off-road vehicle use is, I mean, you could say recreational, or, you know, just be more specific like that.
Off-road recreational vehicle use.
I mean, sometimes we have fun driving them while we're doing maintenance, but...
No.
I knew it.
But...
Okay.
And deed prescriptions, I don't know that I've seen that word used.
Precisely.
Deed restrictions.
Yeah, I know.
It says prescription.
I know. And I said it on a, you know, on
is,
purpose.
Is the word because prescription?
Because restrictions are restrictive. They're not affirmative.
Okay.
You don't have to...
I'm just trying to be clear on what you want me to
Well, what I'm saying is that there are usually... Easement documents have a long laundry list of things you can't do. They don't have a long laundry list of things that you must do that are more active management. Usually there's an escape clause, something like maintenance. You'll do maintenance, and you'll do management to preserve the function, da-da-da-da-da. But I'm trying to be a little bit more to push the affirmative prescriptive as opposed to just proscriptive element there.
To what level of detail would you like us to create this? Because that's like a management
look,
plan.
Look, they don't have to take the money. If
well, I'm
if
just,
they
yeah.
don't want the...
No, I mean, I'm just trying to get clarity on what's being expected.
I just tried to write it sort of generally so that we can work on something that...
Well,
we're happy to work.
About as part of the motion that we allow council to make any adjustments?
Right.
To
and
the
maybe
language
you could say
that may be necessary.
Requirements instead of instead of deed restrictions, because that's a term of art, and to say requirements instead of deed restrictions.
We're comfortable working with staff and council.
I think that's fine. The motion should include that council can modify the language as necessary to carry out the board's intent.
Okay.
Pursuant to this
thank
discussion.
You
I'll take that as a friendly amendment to the motion. All right. We have the motion has been seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
No. Okay. Mr. Hodgson opposes. The motion carries. Thank you very much. We are done for this evening.
Yes.
Okay.
And thank you, everyone. We appreciate it.
And we'll
thank you, board.
In the morning at 8:30?
Yes.
Okay.
And...